Welcome to the Scottish podcast by Scottish people about Scottish things. We're three lifelong friends and displaced Scotsmen who get together to talk about our homeland, the weird stuff that happens there, and to remind us why we are the way we are. Welcome to This'll Do Nicely. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's story with Rory. It is a legit actual episode today. It is not nonsense that we recorded on our phone. Johnny is back from his ordeal. And Chris is with me as well. How are you boys doing?
Great, Rory.
Thanks. Wow. Thanks for the enthusiasm. Yeah. I know it's Friday night, but...
It's Friday night. I think it's going to be loose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think...
And it's a big...
We've got a whole week to catch up on. This is going to be big.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a topic
that we talked
about a lot. A week's
worth of banter is missing, so we have to get into it.
Yeah, we haven't done a full episode in a while, and it's a Friday night, and yeah, we're all a bit knackered, a bit punchy. This is definitely going to go long.
Could possibly go wrong.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm excited.
I've got the sniffles. It's going to be great for editing and listening purposes. Probably do some heavy breathing.
I'm going to swap out my seat for the squeaky one, Rory, just for your benefit.
If you wouldn't mind.
My baby's still a bit sick, so you're probably going to hear her crying at some point.
It makes for the best kind of episode, I reckon.
A lot of stuff's going to go down.
Background atmosphere noises, I generally chalk that up to, like, production value. It's just it's things like Johnny's squeaky chair. I sometimes leave my fan on. Chris, you have the loudest mouse click on, like, ever invented. It sounds like you're stapling things through the entire episode.
It's just him hitting the table out of pure frustration.
Don't want to hear another story.
Shut up.
When is this over?
There is no mouse. It's a trackpad.
How? That makes sense. Is it attached to the microphone? Is the trackpad on the microphone? How are you two doing?
Don't know what to tell you.
Really good, Rory.
Yeah, how's your week been?
Well, I got kidnapped. That was a bummer. It's been good. It's been quite long, I'll say. So I'm feeling... Go on.
Every single week he asks us how we're doing. He's done it for about 100 odd episodes-ish. And every single week it's... Nothing's prepared. It's just, he's caught us unawares.
Right.
It's like, we know how this goes. It's very formulaic.
That's a really good point. Maybe in another 100 we'll get good at it.
Right. We'll eventually finally be professional, but I don't know. I don't trust. I was just looking at the sporran real quick to see if anybody had emailed in to... see if Johnny was okay, and I see that we've got an email and some sort of audio from Josh, which I haven't listened to yet.
I've not heard it yet.
But
I think we should listen to it. Is that possible?
I'm gonna draw. Maybe I can. Can I play it live right now? Let me see.
I'll figure that out. I'll tell you the Instagram message that I got on my own account from Sousa. Who is the one that did the artwork of, like, the three of us riding the manatee and the unicorn and stuff.
Oh my god, that was amazing.
And I shared you this in a screenshot, but it's just hilarious. It was her saying, now that I have an insider, was Johnny supposed to do the research but didn't get round to it, or could you really just not find a recording date that works for everybody?
Brilliant.
So I just, yeah, that just
I also
made me
want
very
it
happy.
To be known, we were talking about this beforehand, that, like, the idea that Rory gets annoyed to, like, wants more support and research is just nonsense. Like, he hates it when anyone else does it.
Well,
he just told us off air that he doesn't like not having the control.
I like it when it's all or nothing. When it's this weird, like, guys, today's going to be a mess, but in the best way possible. When it's this weird middle ground, that's when it creeps me out. I'm excited, though. Can you guys hear this? If I play this, let's find out. Are you hearing
me? Hey, guys, it's Josh. I was just reaching out to you. I listened to this week's episode.
I mean, you need to not pause it halfway through.
Hey, guys, it's Josh. I was just reaching out to you. I listened to this week's episode, the recordings. I'm a little worried about Johnny, so I figured I'd get a hold of you and offer you some assistance. I would have reached out sooner, but I've been busy trying to make you guys a song. It's mostly for Chris. It's Trap Will Do Nicely. And then when I'm finished with it, I'm going to take it and do a Northside dubstep remix. And then after that, what is, you know, being from Houston, I'm going to have to chop and screw it. But anyway, I just wanted to get a hold of you and offer my special set of skills. Not sure what those are. I guess, like, I've known the manatees, you know, I've drawn them. I'm kind of in their heads. I'm also really good at drawing demonic penises, as well as whale penises. I guess mostly just drawing penises. It's probably get some more skills.
He's a father, isn't he?
I'm not sure if I'm going to be able to do this alone, so I thought maybe I could reach out to some other readers, you know, to kind of help out with this case. You know, maybe Jackie can bring, like, her penny whistle. She can be, like, our Mad Piper. She can, you know, keep morale up while we're out there. Also, you know, give direction while we're on the battlefield. And then, two, maybe get Tim in on it, you know, because if we come upon these assailants or assailant, you know, we're going to need somebody to wrestle them down, which is important, you know, because I don't want to do it by myself. And then maybe then we get Sally, you know, because once we've caught them, somebody's going to let need them know what, you know, what they've done wrong and how they're going to correct that. And then maybe we can get Dave in it. You know, for the latter, he's going to come in with the statistics, the analytics, let us know, like, how we what did, what we can do to improve. You know, give us some stats on that.
We do.
And then, you know, I guess maybe what I'll do is I'll get a bunch of barrels together, you know, put some eye holes in it, maybe robotic barrels. We'll come together to form one, like, super barrel robot. That sounds pretty lame. But, you
is
know,
there a song?
Just wanted you guys to know that, you
think
know.
So.
We're not going to stand by and let these people, you know, mess with Johnny. You know, nobody messes with the heart and soul of This Will Do Nicely. Nobody. Nobody is above the law. That's it, man. Thanks, guys. Bye.
What a message. I mean, thanks, Josh.
He started that. Am I wrong? He started off by saying he had a song for us.
Yeah, where's the song?
And then just...
I'm going to put this out there, guys. I don't think he prepped that ahead of time.
That was incredible.
I think he was bored on his way home one night.
I mean, that would be a great podcast, all that lot together that he just listed in his crime fighting force.
Yes. That should be a Netflix show.
That would be brilliant.
Yeah.
That was an amazing message.
Yeah, thanks. As always, Josh, you never fail to deliver. That was.
Can we just wrap this up? Let me just do the whiskey episode next week. God.
Josh should visit Reykjavik because there's a very, I mean, we've all been there to the Penis Museum. It'd be great inspiration for his drawings.
Yes. True. Josh would love it. They're all shapes and sizes from many, many species. I think there was a golden penis, was there not?
I think there was.
It's Harry Potter. It's Harry Potter, Rory.
Yeah, Harry Potter and the Golden Penis. I forgot about that.
Harry Potter has to catch the Golden Penis in Quidditch ends when he does that.
Yeah, but it's a man's penis, okay? That's where it came from. It couldn't have come from anybody else but a bloody man. Look, thanks, Josh. Thanks for that. That was, as always, nonsensical, but we thoroughly enjoyed it.
Before we get into whiskey, there's one other thing from last week's episode that I noticed in the recording that I wonder if I could just play you a snippet of while we're here.
Okay, sure.
It's going to be a six-parter.
Yeah, this is never going to end, is it?
Yeah, definitely.
No.
Where is my window? Oh, shit.
See, it happens. Sometimes performance issues happen to the best of us.
Okay, I'm just going to go from here. It's happened to me, Rory.
Refresh.
You said this whole recording of stuff was Johnny's idea. I don't even know if he's ever going to do it. And quite frankly, I'm upset. And I just wish that he would at least turn these voice recordings into a song or something like that. Quite frankly, I'm upset.
Johnny, what's going on?
song.
Johnny, song. Are you recording something? Johnny,
song. His voice recording.
Give the readers what they want. Give us something.
See, Josh, that's how it's done.
Yeah, that's Josh, you, if you're not going to make songs, I will.
That was banging. Guys, can I say something right now? Can I get you guys to promise me something?
Yes.
Can you play that song at my funeral?
Yes.
How does it feel that Finlay's the new Blue Ivy? Like, he's already...
I don't know, very proud.
Yeah, he's already a recording artist. It's incredible.
He got some rave reviews on our Facebook account, so, you know.
That checks out. Pretty well. He was definitely the star of last episode.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Johnny.
There you go.
Incredible work.
Can I thoroughly go now? Leave this episode now? I've done my bit.
Yeah.
I'm out.
Considering that we gave you the first 8 letters to do, I'm worried that it's going to be a lot of dead air.
Have you got the first section, Johnny?
I do, amazingly.
Amazing.
So
it'll only take about 2.5 hours. So
yeah, it'll be fine. So what we're doing this week, if you haven't put it together by our ramblings and the amazing Instagram post that I just did, we're talking about whiskey. Finally, after talking about it a lot, drinking a lot of it during the recordings, and generally just... I think we were kind of waiting. We were waiting to do it when we were all together, but it seems like that's never really going to happen. So, and Chris, you've generally been putting it off because, as we'll find out, you hate whiskey. But now we're finally getting to it, and we've decided the best possible approach to this complex and involved and topic that is important to a lot of people in this world. The best approach to it is an A to Z.
Yeah, Chris, tell us about that. Why was that a good idea?
Well, I'll tell you why. Because A to Z is the most comprehensive way of doing something, and that way we won't miss a single thing out. We've talked about, you know, certain other subjects have been Idiot's Guide to Bonnie Prince Charlie and stuff, and it's always felt very incomplete. But if you do an A to Z, then that's like 26 facts that you have to say about whiskey. And as far as I know, nothing has more than 26 facts. So,
fair point.
Well, okay. Yeah.
So we should cover all the bases, really.
Yeah, an entirely comprehensive guide.
There's always that chance.
Yeah. Whiskey. Excellent.
It should be said that none of us have compared notes, so there may well be quite a lot of overlap.
Yeah. This is how we do it, you know? Loosey-goosey. We like to surprise each other on the night.
Johnny for A has done all the whiskey. Yeah.
Starting at Alcantoshan all the way through.
Guide to whiskey. That's what I'm hoping for.
I thought we just named one for each letter. That was it. You don't have to say anything about it. You just name it, have a drink, move on.
Yeah, so Johnny, you're starting us off. We're not even doing it turnabout, guys. We're doing it section three.
We could. I mean, well, no, let's just go.
Should we tell the readers what we're drinking first? Just if they want to play along at home.
Yeah. Well, currently I'm drinking Singleton, which I will talk about a wee bit more later on. But Singleton is it's from the Highlands region and is generally delicious. It's pretty small. I think it's the only distillery in the Black Isle these days. And I am drinking their reserve collection, Liberty. And it's delicious. I don't really have much else to say about it. It's light colored, a bit peaty, but easy on the palate.
Well, I'm drinking Ardbeg Wee Beastie, which is an Isla single malt Scotch whiskey. And as you guys know, I'm very, very anti whiskey. But, you know, because
you've
I'm
gone in pretty heavy, I would say, for, you know, being not so into whiskey.
Yeah, I know. I'm worried about that. I just basically chose something that I like the look of. I've also got a little Johnny Walker Black Label miniature here, just if I really want to kind of get spicy. I won't be talking about Ardbeg, but I will be talking about where it's from in my section.
That's good. I am, to complete the round, I'm drinking a very nice, also from Islay, Bowmore 12-year-old whiskey, which is rather delicious, and I just bought this week because it's one of my favourites.
Johnny, why is there none of it left?
It's all gone.
Because I drank it's quite just, a lot of it.
That's just raspberry.
I just showed the bottom half. Okay. Like, there's loads of it.
Oh, there you go. I have a couple more that I bought today that I'm going to, I think, maybe do some ASMR on it when I open it and pour it and then sup it.
You filthy bastard.
Yeah. Gross.
Oh, also, guys, just because I hate whiskey, to wash it down, I have a local Virginia Session IPA.
Wow.
And some water just when things start getting really heavy.
This is what I'm worried about is I'm... Third, I've got the last section of the alphabet, and I have literally three bottles of whiskey in front of me. And again, it's Friday night. I'm pretty excited about this topic. Ew. It's gonna. I'm gonna be amazed if we remember. If I remember X, Y, and Z.
X is for X-ray whiskey.
Can we
whiskey that make you see through walls?
I mean, you're not far off. What I've actually got for X. Before we get to get warmed up, shall we maybe talk about our opinions and how we came to whiskey? By that I mean
what?
Like,
Rory, this episode is going to be long enough as it is.
I know, but like, you got to give a little bit of like personality to it. Maybe Johnny, you can do that first for your section, and then Chris can do it for his section. I'll do it for my section. So Johnny,
wait, how we got into whiskey?
Yeah, like, what do you think about whiskey? How often do you drink it? When did you start drinking it? That sort of stuff.
I think I started drinking it probably in my... I remember drinking it, like, when I was very young, where, like, my dad would get one, and you'd always be like, can I try it? And it would, you feel like your head's going to explode. But then I think I started drinking it more in my, like, late 20s, probably, mid to late 20s, where I was actually quite enjoying it. And then I'll talk about it in a little bit, actually, but... We did quite a lot of trips as a family to Islay, and I think like going to some of the places where, you know, there's basically a huge concentration of distilleries and spending some time there, it's become kind of associated to that for me also. And so I drink it like reasonably regular, I'd say. Like, I usually have a few bottles around, you know, for breakfast.
Do you sway to the Islay whiskies then?
I actually used to much more, because Islay, I'm sure someone will talk about it, but is notoriously known for being quite smoky, like quite peaty and like kind of intense. And I used to, that's where I kind of began. I was like, I liked the theater of it all, like really heavy, like really intense. You feel like you're drinking the earth kind of whiskies. Actually, in recent years, I'm a bit more like mellower. Like, I like ones you can drink a bit more of and it not feel like... you know, some of them feel like they're kind of hard going, and they're kind of exciting for that reason, but I'd prefer the slightly... So like Bowmore is a good example where it's from Islay, but it's maybe on the less smoky end of some of those other ones.
Hmm, okay.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Should have got you to do I screwed this up already.
I am doing A for Islay.
All right, Johnny. Let's do this. Let's start with A. Let's see how we do.
All right, A is an easy one, and I'm sure you can probably guess what A stands for. And A, in this case for whiskey, is the Angel's Share, which one way of looking at that is that's a 2012 Ken Loach film about a man stealing whiskey. But the broader meaning of that is that it stands for basically distilleries in Scotland that are allowed to write off 2% of their production every year to what is known as the Angel's Share. And because whiskey is traditionally aged in barrels, you know, it's an imperfect seal, oxygen gets in, water and alcohol escape, and a certain amount in a barrel over the time that it sits in its cave for many years evaporates and vanishes. And this is what's known as the Angel's Share, because they get their little bit of whiskey and then we get to enjoy the rest. And I figure it's kind of a nice place, it's kind of a short one, but a good place to start, because... I think it's kind of a well-known phrase, I think, at this point, but it speaks to me about the kind of theater of whiskey. You know, this is a way of making a drink that literally sits for years in a dark cavern in a barrel, you know, for 10, 20, 30, however many years you want to. And it's in that time, so much of what whiskey is happens. You know, it's affected by its environment, the elements, the humidity, the temperature, the size of the barrel, all that stuff. And so it all makes for this kind of weird unknown that goes with that of like, how much will be gone when you open that in a decade's time and how much will still be there?
That's kind of what I don't understand about the Angel Share, because this 2% per year, and then we age whiskey, it means within 50 years it's going to be gone.
Right. And it's a lot over right. a long period.
So I guess I can't get my head around it. Like losing 20, like most whiskeys or a lot of whiskeys are aged 10 years.
Right.
You lose 20% of the barrel.
Yeah.
It's wild.
It is kind of madness. I also heard
thirsty
someone.
Angels.
Yeah, you got to feed the angels, you know, keep them happy. They look after you. It's fine.
That's probably where Lucifer came from.
I know Jesus. I know. He's
oh, no, it's happened.
Lucifer fell to earth or fell to like hell because he was just pissed.
Yeah.
Just stumbled on the carrot.
He had that 50 year whiskey that you're talking about.
I did also hear someone talking about the devil's share, which he was attributing to, instead of the kind of, you know, nice natural things of evaporation, was more like people stealing, spillages, leaky casks, all that kind of thing. It's like, yeah, that seems fair enough.
It 100% sounds like something that distillers made up just to steal a bit.
Oh, 1,000%. And like, yeah. I think that's what I quite love about whiskey. It's such a weird world full of odd stories and family-owned distilleries and yeah. people like, I've got a good story later about stealing whiskey, actually, so I'll come back to that in a little okay. bit. So that kicks us off at A. It's easy, it's straightforward. We know the Angel Share. B, and it's, we talked about this a little bit already in a way, but I've realized that like a lot of the whiskeys I like begin with the letter B. And so I think along the way, it's kind of nice if people haven't tried any whiskeys or want to try other ones. Hopefully we can point the readers at some ones that maybe you wouldn't have heard of before, as well as some of the more famous ones. So I want to talk about two of my favorites, which are the Balvenie and Bowmore. So Bowmore, I just talked about. And I'm assuming we're going to come on to some of these across some of the different letters, but it's worth saying that traditionally there's kind of five regions of, and of course, a lot of the way we're going to talk about this skews to Scottish whiskey particularly. And traditionally in Scotland, there's kind of five regions of the country that are like called after the where they make whiskey. So there's Highlands, Speyside, Lowlands, Campbelltown, and Isla, and which we mentioned a couple of. And so Balvenie, which I think I can see Rory pouring one of right now.
Opening one right now.
Amazing. So Balvenie is, I would say, a really delicious whiskey, and not like pretty affordable. It's not like it's kind of, they do a sort of run of the mill one that's actually very delicious. And it's from Speyside, so kind of like central northeastern part of Scotland. I thought it was interesting. I was reading this thing about Speyside that said, he was talking about the spectrum of flavors in Speyside, and they said at one end of the spectrum lie the rich, sweet, sherried qualities of Glenrothes and Macallan. At the other end, there are light, grassy, lunchtime whiskies such as Glenmichael and Livet, which I thought was an incredibly Scottish thing to describe it as a lunchtime whiskey.
There's a lot of, the next stage, the obvious next step in that is the breakfast whiskey. Which,
exactly.
It's a slippery slope. Breakfast whiskey? That's Oof. Where we make our money, Johnny.
Ouch. I do remember once going to Isla, and there was some relative of a relative that we knew, and we literally went round at like 11 in the morning to say hi to this person. And he was like, come away in. Is anyone want a whiskey? It's like, I'm okay. And I think someone got one, and he literally poured like almost an entire tumbler. I was just like, what happens here? I guess there's not much else to do.
Yeah.
But anyway, so Balvenie is kind of, the distillery is like right up kind of between Aberdeen and Elgin, like near the Cairngorm National Park. It's one of the only ones in Scotland that still grows its own barley. It's one of only seven that still has its own malting floor, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. Founded in 1892. And Balvenie, I think, is really interesting, where it was known particularly because there's a malt master. So in every distillery, there tends to be kind of a lead distiller called the malt master. And this guy was called David Stewart, who's basically, I didn't realize this, was the first to create the idea of wood finishing. So while it's matured in one cask, they would then take it into another cask that might be, you know, ex-bourbon casks or old sherry or rum casks to kind of change the complexity of the flavor. Hence why I think the one you're drinking, Rory, is the Doublewood. Is that right?
That's right. I'm drinking the Balvenie Doublewood 12-year. which is in whiskey oak barrel. Many years of maturation in traditional whiskey casks mellows the maturing spirit and imparts warming layers of vanilla spiciness, which I can taste that. And then sherry oak, further maturation. That's a word.
Yeah.
In European oak sherry cask increases complexity, bringing fruity, honeyed depths to the resulting single malt. And Jane and I've introduced Jane to a lot of whiskies, and definitely sherry cask is one of our favorite. Like, it just sweetens it and makes it very easy to drink. So any sherry cask is something I get kind of like drawn to.
Yeah, that, and actually that double wood is, it's like 12 years old. It's, you know, it's not a super old whiskey, but I would, if people haven't had it, I would definitely highly recommend that and go and check it out. There's another one they do that's called Caribbean, as we like to say, cask that is finished in rum casks as opposed to sherry, which is like tiny bit sweeter, I think, but also like quite nice and probably around about the same price. So that's my first like recommendation.
Chris, what's your take on Balvenie's?
Yeah, love the sound of it. Sound like all the all the casky stuff. Yeah.
Tastes like whiskey.
Tastes exactly the same as everything else, but never mind.
They taste vastly different. Having just gone from the Singleton to the Balvenie, they're so very different. I don't know which
I like that Balvenie Simpleton. That's my favorite one.
It is interesting. So the other one I want to talk about is Bowmore, which I'll not steal your thunder, Chris, if you're going to talk about Islay. But Islay is a bit of a special place. It's a little island off the west coast of Scotland. And I remember going once, and I think often with whiskey, you drink one type of whiskey at a time. You know, it might be at the end of a meal, it might be in an evening, whatever. And it's actually quite rare that you taste a few next to each other. And I remember having this sort of, not like revolution moment, but we sort of went to a bar and we were going to buy a bottle. So we're like, let's go and try a few, like one after the other. And I think that when you suddenly see the differences, they're really dramatic. Yeah. When you don't often see that when you're drinking one on its own, I guess.
Maybe if you've got like a mature adult palate, and you can appreciate whiskey and the different styles of whiskey is what you're saying, John.
I'm getting a sort of nose of IPA beer off this one.
I don't make any pretenses that I don't have the palate of a 6-year-old. I'm not going to pretend that this isn't what's going on here. And I'm fine with it.
Look, as long as you're happy, that's all I care about.
Okay, let's keep moving. So Bowmore, Islay, I think, is often associated with very peaty, very fiery whiskies, partly because there's a lot of peat on the island, which they use to dry the barley. It's kind of an amazing place where, like, there's not much to do except make whiskey, arguably. And, you know, it's just this small island with about 10 distilleries on it. It's really incredible.
Spend 5 minutes researching distilleries and whiskey in Scotland, you realize that's the entire reason the industry exists.
Yes.
There was fuck all to do.
I thought you were telling me off there. Johnny, no. Spend 5 minutes researching this.
No. I'm just saying, like, everywhere I looked was like, oh, there's nothing else in this town except a distillery. Or it's a small region with 7 distilleries and a ice rink. And that was it.
Made of whiskey. Yes.
And so Bowmore is kind of interesting. It's set on a little inlet. In the island, the island sort of has this kind of part of it that almost feels like an inlet's the only word I've got, really. But it's very picturesque, like a very beautiful place. And, you know, if you catch it on the right day, it's pretty amazing.
Johnny.
Yeah.
Now, in my extensive research of Islay, which was definitely more than 5 minutes, can you go to Islay and do like a bus tour of all the distilleries, or do you just have to go to what, like, if you went around all the distilleries, would you just
hammered? Loads of them.
You would fall into the sea, right?
I also remember being there and seeing people on bike tours, like push bikes, and I was like, that feels so dangerous to me. So I'll just cycle between the distillery, have a little drink, like, you know, 5 drinks in, you're done for, and yes, you will be in the sea.
Yeah, a lot of those distilleries are at the edge of the water as well, the edge of the island. So you just wobble a little bit on your bike, you're gone.
It's beautiful. It's very kind of rugged, and there isn't really much else, but it's very pretty, and the beaches are lovely. So, you know, have a drink, yeah. Go for a swim, freshen you up, on to the next one.
It's better than Lewis, I'll tell you that.
Those guys are savages.
You know, I found out that Trump's mum's from Lewis.
Oh, makes sense.
It was like last week, I completely forgot about that. It's like, oh my God, of course she is.
That's brilliant. Okay, so Bowmore is the other one. I'd recommend it. Go to Islay, taste that. I think it's a good way into Islay whiskies without blowing your head off. You know, it's not like the sort of Lagavulins and Lafroig.
Not like Ardbeg.
Not like Ardbeg. Very close to Ardbeg on the landscape, but not like Ardbeg.
Monster of a dram.
And delicious. Drinking a 12-year-old would highly
recommend.
Young
and intensely smoky with a rich, explosive mouthfeel of chocolate, tar, and savory meats. Cracked black pepper and sappy pine resin in the snack. I'm getting a lot of that.
As I was saying on the text earlier, I feel like you can say anything about whiskey and people just nod their heads and go, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm not tasting that, but
tastes
I get you.
Tastes like 25-year-old jerky that's been left in the sun.
Oh, that's very astute
this
of you to notice that.
This is going to be amazing because Chris isn't used to drinking whiskey and is going to get real leery real quick. I'm excited. I mean, we all are, but I can see Chris going off the cliff quickly. Got to let another cat out. Talking about C
for cats, perfect segue. C, the only ones on my letters that fell from the regions were C for Campbelltown. So Campbelltown, as we said earlier, there's kind of five regions of whiskey making in Scotland. And Campbelltown's in kind of this, what I can only describe as like the wee sticky out bit on the southwest, called the Kintyre Peninsula, made famous because Paul McCartney lived on a farm there for a long time and wrote Mull of Kintyre about this very place in 1977.
Yes. Yeah.
So, you know, on a good day, you can see over to Northern Ireland. You guys might know it. The Isle of Arran's near there. We probably did a school trip. You might have climbed Goat Fell. It's that part of the world, right? And the sort of flavor profiles of that place, I mean, you could say anything here, but, you know, people talk about it being sort of hints of salt, smoke, dried fruits, vanilla, toffee, kind of slightly pungent. Some sort of connection to like maritime roots, you know, being so coastal. Often people say like, you know, it's sort of more oily, salty profiles. And like...
taste of oil.
Yeah, just like straight out the sea. And I think in its heyday, it was clearly a bustling place. You know, there was, I think, 30 distilleries at one point. And now there's basically only three remaining in Campbelltown. And
now, is that because it's all been bought up by conglomerates and stuff and they've all been consolidated?
No, I think they all closed. I read this thing, there was a book, A Guide to Whiskies of Scotland by a guy called Clay Risen, who said they fell away after churning out whiskey in volume with little concern for quality. So it feels a bit story of kind of got too big for its boots, didn't care about the quality, it was just churning it out and eventually lost its customers because they weren't making good whiskey anymore.
This is just dirty water. Nah, it's whiskey. They'll sell it. Fine, they'll buy any old fish. Don't worry about
it. Yeah. But I think the contrast is interesting. So now, tiny, three distilleries, but there was a line I read that in sort of 1891, when it was in its prime, it was by capita meant to be like the richest town in Britain because there was so much production and like so much wealth happening. So it's really kind of fallen from...
The Monaco of Scotland's southwest. Exactly. That's what it was known as.
I spent about 2 hours a day trying to get a bottle of Campbelltown, like not a bottle of Campbelltown, but a bottle from Campbelltown, and it's impossible in New York at least.
So the three ones that are there are Springbank, Glen Scotia, and Glengyle. Three of which I'm not sure I've ever, maybe Springbank?
I'm not heard of any of them.
Isn't there a Kilkennan?
Ah, let me come on to that. So. Okay. The reason two of these places are kind of interesting. So I was reading about Springbank, which, again, like the others, established in 1828, claims to be the oldest independent family-owned distillery in Scotland, and now is still in the hands of the fifth generation of this Mitchell family, which is kind of cool. And I don't think it's the Mitchells from the East Enders, but that would make it even better.
That would be amazing.
Also the only distillery in Scotland to carry out the entire production process. So like the floor malting, the maturation and bottling all on its premises, which is kind of cool. And so I was reading about that. And then I started to read about Glengyle, which is another one in Campbelltown. And it's kind of interesting because it also has this connection to the Mitchell family. So it's kind of just hilariously typical, where it was founded in 1872 by William Mitchell, who had previously been part of the Springbank distillery, but apparently fell out with his brother who owned it. And so he joined with some of his other brothers and built Glengyle, which is just a great example of like Scottish family feud. I'm going to make a better distillery than you. And so it might be like, you know, when Rory eventually starts his true crime podcast and breaks out from these brothers.
So soon.
You and Josh.
Yeah.
Leave us.
Just Josh is my roving reporter.
Josh, where are you?
Every episode's 4 hours long because it's just him rambling about the things that he did that day. Do you have any clues, Josh?
Did you write a song? So anyway, cut to kind of modern day. So actually, what was interesting was it closed eventually in 1925 as kind of part of post-war economic downturn and shut its doors. And so cut to modern day. And actually, what's interesting, in the year 2000, another descendant of the Mitchell family spent a few years kind of reinstalling the equipment, kind of repairing and rebuilding the distillery itself. And it started production again in 2004.
That's nice.
And so the first whiskey kind of came out of there in 2014. And it makes it this funny claim of being the first new distillery of the new millennium, which is kind of sort of cheating a bit because it was there before. It's just kind of been resurrected a bit, I suppose.
Must be kind of a lot. You got to invest an awful lot if, like, you start something in 2004 and then you know you're not going to see your product for 10 years.
Yeah.
That's the other bit of whiskey of, like, making changes. You know, if you decide, I wonder what a 10-year in a different barrel tastes like. Like, you kind of have to wait 10 years to understand those changes.
You take it, like, oh, that's
just
shit.
Terrible. Just, yeah.
Nah, throw it out.
That's what I think is so interesting about the whole
start
process.
Again.
Yeah. It's very slow game, but clearly that's what makes it also quite interesting, right?
Yeah, I'm holding back some things because there's some of my letters will touch on this stuff. But yeah, I guess I hadn't really thought about that like, yeah, if you're just starting out, I mean, the minimum is 3 years.
Right.
So you can't produce anything for 3 years. So you just, start making it in your bath while you're getting a loan from the bank and then you're making the building so you can sell. Yeah, it's...
I think so.
Terrifying.
I think that's why it's so kind of also precarious, and why you'd read about so many distilleries that are not there anymore. You know, I'm sure it's a hard game. The last bit on that is you said about Kilkerran, Rory. I don't really understand why this is, but the whiskey that they bottled is not called Glengyle because apparently that name is owned by Loch Lomond Distillers. So the bottle they sell is called Kilkerran, not Glengyle. Which again is just like, there's such a weird world of all these like interconnected families, and it's been running for, you know, years and years and years. And so go figure.
I also have a suspicion that I've never looked into it, but a lot of the names that they name whiskies are just made up Scottish nonsense. Like,
yeah, oh yeah, of course.
Pick something that sounds Scottish.
It's very thistled in Iceland. We don't quite know the origin of this name, but we picked it somewhere along the line.
Auchentoshan's easily my favorite. And I'm pretty sure that's a place, but there's just some of them you read when you go down the list. It's like, I don't think that's a real...
Auchentoshan just sounds great, doesn't it? It's so satisfying to see.
Yeah.
Okay, last little bit on Campbelltown is that I just found this song about Campbelltown Loch by Andy Stewart that I love, that the chorus goes, Campbelltown Loch, I wish you were whiskey. Campbelltown Loch, okay. Campbelltown Loch, I wish you were whiskey. I would drink you dry.
I think I know that song.
Can I just play you a tiny bit of it? Because it's very familiar. It's just great. And sort of hilariously Scottish, I suppose.
Oh, Campbelltown Loch, I wish you were whiskey. Campbelltown Loch, oh hi. Campbelltown Loch, I wish you were whiskey. I would drink you dry. Now, Campbelltown Loch is a beautiful place, but the price of the whiskey is grim. How nice it would be if the whiskey was free and the loch was full up to the brim. Oh, Campbelltown Loch, I wish you were whiskey. Campbelltown Loch, oh hi. Oh, Campbelltown Loch, I wish you were whiskey. I would drink you dry.
Whiskey, Campbelltown Loch, aye.
Isn't that great? Yeah.
Banging tune.
That's lovely. It's great.
Andy
so
Stewart,
it was
hero.
Yeah, he's amazing. It was quite nice actually, because I would say of all the regions, I probably know the least about Campbelltown, so it was quite fun to just learn a bit more about it along the way. So that's Camden. I mean,
it's definitely the like red-headed stepchild of the whiskey right. regions, right? Or
yeah.
Or the one that got like a bit too big for its britches and everybody makes fun of now.
I think it's probably that.
Campbelltown peaked in high school. That's it. Yeah. Everybody else has got proper jobs. Campbelltown's...
He was captain of the football team.
Yeah.
And now flamed out after breaking his leg.
Yeah, he works night shift as a bouncer at the local pub, dates girls that are of questionable age.
Which of the regions is like the one that was quiet and dorky and now is a billionaire?
Probably Isla.
Yeah, it's got to be right.
Yeah. It's quietly getting it right for a long time.
Okay, we're only on C. I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Chris, this was your idea.
Sorry.
The look of regret on your face.
Okay, the first couple are a bit longer.
I didn't think Johnny was going to be so involved.
Sorry. You can't be annoyed both ways. You can't be annoyed with me not doing research and annoyed when I do some.
I didn't realize how into whiskey you were.
I'm quite enjoying it. Okay, I felt for Rory
just
because
more of your wee beastie, Chris.
Yeah, just have a wee sip. So I was thinking about Rory because Rory likes to tick a few boxes. He wants to talk about the history, like do the facts, do the bases. So D is for distilling.
Do the facts.
Do the facts. Because we should talk about how it's made. Like I feel like I'm doing good Rory impression. Like do a bit about how it's done. Okay. So this is about Scotch whisky particularly because there's some things that you have to do in Scotland. And it's made from just three ingredients. So cereal, like barley, water, yeast. And I guess if you include it, thyme and wood, I suppose. In order to be Scotch, it's got to be distilled and matured in Scotland for at least 3 years, as you said earlier, Rory, and bottled at a minimum alcoholic strength of 40%.
Minimum.
So how do you make it? Well, first, you take some barley and you malt it, which basically means you start the germination process. You steep it in water, and it starts to encourage it to kind of partially sprout. And this is where I said early on about malting floors, like the barley is literally in the old distilleries spread out in a massive floor that people turn over with spades by hand in order to let it dry. And so this is to start the process to produce sugars, which will eventually turn into alcohol later in the process. You take that barley, the sprouting barley, and you want to kind of stop the germination so it gets dried in a kiln. And this is where... you know, you often hear about peated whiskey, as we talked about for Isla. This is where that flavor comes from, because those fires can be coal-powered or similar, but you can also have them peat-fired. And so, hence, where you get all that peaty flavor from is actually quite early on in the process, which is kind of cool. Got it. And there's a weird kind of aside here where, like, if you visit a lot of distilleries in Scotland, you'll see that they have these kind of pagoda chimneys, which feels kind of out of place for this style and history of Scotland. And I read this thing,
a pagoda chimney?
So it's sort of those kind of like...
You just give me like 20, 25 minutes on pagoda chimneys, please.
No, just Google it.
This episode's going to take 10 years.
Just Google it. Chris, I'm worried about you. You look upset already. I'm going to go really fast through my rest.
No, take your time. Enjoy it. Okay. Savor it like a nice whiskey.
So Google pagoda and you'll understand. But the reason that they do that is there was one guy called Charles Doig who basically was an architect on 56 different distilleries, and on one side was trying to improve the ventilation for the kilns, but at the same time he just was inspired by Asian architecture and made them all look like pagodas, which is like
So there's no like actual purpose for it. It's just he liked the look.
I mean,
I
think he designed the chimneys to be better ventilated, but I think the top is like flair, which is kind of interesting.
He definitely just reused his work.
You need one of these, they're great.
Oh, I've got one somewhere. Yeah, just copy and paste.
So much so that it became known as the Doig ventilator, which is also great.
Yeah.
When you become like the whiskey architect guy, it's like who's gonna build our distillery for us? Go get Chuck Doig.
Rory, as you've said, play the hits, yeah? No one wants the B-sides.
Right, and you eventually, like, after the third one, if you don't build it with a pagoda chimney, everybody's like, right, but my whiskey's not going to be good enough. Like, I need I need the good chimneys. I need the whiskey chimney.
My whiskey's not going to be pagoda enough.
No.
You have more of your whiskey, please.
And there must be so much of that, right?
About whiskey.
E is for everything else.
We're going to be here on Sunday, aren't we? That's right. Oof. Okay, so Pagoda's Gymnase is an aside. Once dried, you take all your barley and you mill it and you mix that with hot water. And that becomes what's called the wort or the mash. And it's like a porridge, which starts this conversion of starch into sugar. This gets put into huge big vats called washbacks, where you add yeast, the third ingredient, and fermentation starts here. So the yeast eats the sugar, converts it to alcohol, and you basically end up with this kind of like low strength alcoholic liquid called wash. Then, I mean, if anyone's ever been on a distillery tour, this is where you end up, where it gets put into stills, often copper stills, which are kind of like impressive, these big like swan neck containers. And often that's where you end up on the tour. Like, look at these beautiful copper stills. Yeah. Where it's heated up, and because the alcohol boils at a lower temperature than the water, it goes up through these necks, condenses into the next still, and so on. And usually it's, I think, double or triple distilled, maybe at the max. And so then at this point, it comes out and goes through a little thing called a spirit safe, which is a kind of interesting little glass box that ensure it's
that's
kind of like
that's the thing that they had in Ghostbusters, right? Where they get
This is where they cross the streams and they put it in a glass box.
Okay, I'm interested again. On you go.
I mean, it's kind of not very exciting, but that's for like tax and excise people to make sure that every drop is accounted for and there's like nothing fishy going on.
Yeah, because in the Ghostbusters, it was like the tax or excise or like the health inspector that came and messed around with the spirit box. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It's exactly so like that. For, what a great parallel.
E is for Egon, who is the brains of the Ghostbusters.
Well, this is where the master distiller comes in. So you could call him Egon if you like. And there's a kind of sweet thing in here where when they take the run out, so they cut out a little bit of the beginning and the end of each run. And that's called the heads and tails because it has sometimes like tastes and aromas that they don't want. And then the middle bit is called the heart. And that's what gets put into casks.
Got it.
Rest is you basically wait for... Choose your time. Put it in different barrels. Put it in a warehouse.
Now, how do they decide how long they're going to wait?
I think it's all about the distillery. So I think often with a barrel, you can taste it over the years, right? So you could taste a bit and decide at what point you want to bottle it. And you just, if it's not right, you wait another bit of time.
It has to be minimum 3 years. And traditionally they do, what is it, like... 5, 8, 10, 12, 21, and then anything beyond that is a little bit funky, but I don't know why they have those kind of traditional years.
I'm not sure. I also, like, if you buy a barrel, for instance, like a lot of distilleries let you buy a barrel and put it away,
which
for a while.
I have.
Yeah, I'm quite jealous of this, but I think you can, after a certain amount of time, go and taste it, right, and you decide when to then bottle it.
Yeah,
which is kind of cool. Yeah, and
I think there's even things like it doesn't take color from the barrel. Like if you pull it after, say, 5 years and it's still really light and that's not what you want, you might leave it in for a bit longer. So I think it's all down to that sort of stuff.
Right. I see.
I think that's the thing. It's like so many small things make change in there. You know, the ingredients, the size of the still, the speed at which it goes through there, the length of time you leave it, the location, all that stuff. And that's what makes whiskey so interesting. It's very few things, but very complex
It's
flavors.
At that part, Chris, that science becomes art.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
On that wonderful note. So that's distilling. You're welcome. Okay, we've done A, B, C, D. That's it. I thought we'd done more. Okay,
the
next
as
tier.
Much as the alphabet as Chris's kids
A,
know.
B, C, D. E is for every single tiny detail of the whiskey making process.
I love it.
Okay,
so excited
E
that
is for Edradour, and that's all I'm saying. It's the smallest distillery in Scotland. It's very picturesque. If you want to go away from the usual suspects, go and visit it. It's a farm distillery. That's the end. On to F.
Wow.
I've got an E that I want to take a moment on.
I was trying, Chris.
bear with me. I just want to get your opinions or your thoughts on whiskey with an E or whiskey
without an E. Why don't we go back to A?
No, that's one of mine.
Mother.
Yes.
Okay, fine.
Great. How? Wait. Okay, fine. We'll talk about it then.
It's very convoluted, but I'll explain when we get there.
All right, we'll cut it out.
Okay.
Not cutting out.
F. Look at that. We're already on F. Who'd have thought? F is for fun facts about whiskey. Non-fact-checked fun facts about your favorite whiskey. Okay. Did you know that 42 bottles of whiskey are exported from Scotland every second?
Wow.
Even at nighttime,
every second. Wow. Out they go.
I feel like they should
that is a fun fact.
Bundle them together and do larger exports.
As part of the history of whiskey, you're only allowed to post one at any given time.
That seems...
Yeah, that's why Scotland's economy is in the shitter.
Yeah. Adds to the flavour.
That seems silly.
Did you know that Ardbeg has sold a cask known as Cask Number 3 for £16 million?
I did know that because I had it as one of the things I was going
to
talk about.
Yeah, you just cut it out and jump to the next one. Dangerously close to some of ours, probably.
Yeah.
That's why it's good to go first.
Just generic facts.
Did you know that Frank Sinatra was buried with a bottle of Jack Daniels?
I didn't know that, no.
Also a dollar worth of dimes, apparently, in case he needed to use a cell phone wherever he was going.
We talked about Frank Sinatra. He's
not a
weirdo.
Cell phone, a pay phone, sorry.
I mean, he's an odd duck.
He is. I thought that was kind of weird.
Yeah.
Hoboken's finest.
Yes, you're right.
Did you know that the Glenfiddich bottle is shaped like a triangle to represent the three pillars of whiskey making: air, water, and barley?
Oh, that's Captain Planet.
Yes.
Johnny.
Ah. Yes.
And heart.
You said the heart. The heart of the whiskey. I think like Monkey Fighter or something. I can't remember what the last one was.
Did you know that Mountain Dew was originally designed to be a whiskey chaser?
Yeah, I read this the other day and I was...
What was?
Yeah, this checks out for me. It's like when you read that story about how cops keep Coca-Cola in their boots so that they, in the trunk, so that if they come across a bloody accident, then they can just pour bottles of Coke over all the blood on the road and it washes off. That's what Mountain Dew and whiskey feels like for me.
That's horrifying. Mountain Dew is also a really bad drink.
Yeah, cover up the taste, not kind of complement it kind of approach.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed.
I like this too, that the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, Bill Wilson, apparently in his deathbed, was demanding whiskey.
Fuck it.
I'm going out right. Although never had it. They never gave him it, apparently. So he did remain... dry, which is kind of interesting. Did you know that in certain Latin American countries, people say whiskey instead of cheese when they're posing for photographs?
No.
Would they say the word whiskey, not like the
I think
Spanish?
It has another word before it, but it is whiskey.
Would you go whiskey?
Whiskey. Makes you smile, right?
Yeah.
Sure. I like this one a lot. Did you know that John Jameson, the founder of Jameson's Irish whiskey, was Scottish?
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
I thought that was quite good. And then my last one is that, so apparently there was a guy, Charles Joan, who was the baker on the Titanic. And he helped save a lot of people, but ended up treading water. And he claims that he survived because of the amount of whiskey he'd drunk prior to the accident. So he was just on the ship, getting boozed up, eventually ended up in the water, and then was like, that's what saved me.
I love it. Yeah. I mean,
which checks out.
More believable than the film.
Right. I guess that's why the old St. Bernards have whiskey or brandy in their collars to help people in the cold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's 100%. It. That's it for your questionable fun facts round on F.
Yeah, those are good fun facts. I like those, Johnny.
Okay. Yeah.
We're a little bit more invested in things now.
Okay, we've gone back. Here's another long one.
G is for grain.
G is for you. G is for global whiskeys. I'm going to name every whiskey in the entire world.
Golly, I love whiskey.
Great whiskeys I've drank in my life. Here's 20 minutes of a gargling sound I'm going to make while drinking whiskey.
G, actually, it's not those things, so shut up. G is for whiskey galore.
No, it's not.
It is. It's for galore, as in whiskey galore.
That's terrible, Johnny.
Which I had to kind of force this in, I suppose, because...
No shit.
Yeah, can you tell? It's fun doing this on a Friday night, isn't it?
Yeah.
So Whiskey Galore is a film. I don't think I've ever actually seen it. Have either of you seen the film?
No. No.
Okay. Well, apparently it was called Tight Little Island in the US when it was released, which that's kind of funny. Tight Little Island.
Yeah.
And
check out that Tight Little Island.
Bunch, you know.
I brought this up because I saw a TV show at Christmas that was Alan Cumming visiting the Hebrides and like just doing various things. And he went to this island called Eriskay. And they sort of trace back the real life story that inspired the movie Whiskey Galore, which is, so Eriskay is in the Outer Hebrides, and to go full circle from previous episodes, it's the island where Bonnie Prince Charlie landed, as you told us about last time. It's got a population of about 150 people. And so the story goes that in February 1941, a ship, the SS Politician, sets off from Liverpool, 8,000 ton ship, so like, big deal, and it's destined for Jamaica and New Orleans. And among its contents are 260,000 bottles of whiskey, which is a lot of whiskey.
It's a lot of whiskey.
And so, and then on the, so as it's kind of like making its way up the coast, on the morning of February the 5th, it's spotted from a beach in Uist, and it's seen in trouble. Like, there's gale force winds, as storms bring, and it's seen like in trouble, and eventually sort of runs aground on the sandbanks and begins to flood. And there's sort of this weird bit here where, because they've been pushed off course, they managed to get a message to lifeboat crew on Barra, but they sent the wrong location. And so it took a long time for the lifeboat to like figure out where they were in the first place. And so,
but they couldn't see the enormous ship that was in
Well, I think
danger.
This is the middle of like a major Scottish storm, so it's probably not that easy to see, I would have thought. And so eventually the locals on Eriskay set out to kind of offer assistance and actually bring the crew safely to shore, which is great. But kind of in the course of doing that, they discover the contents of what, obviously what was on the ship, which is great. And because it's quite a remote island, it took a long time for customs and excise officials to get there, and yes, no duty had been paid on it because it was all due when it landed in so its pathetic destination. And so basically, so began this kind of rogue search and rescue expedition of locals just trying to nab as much whiskey as they possibly could.
This is amazing. I like the idea of like the pub on Eriskay, one guy finding it out and then just trying to corral the team.
Yeah.
A team of like Ocean's 11.
Well, literally. So like this was, you know, wartime rationing had kicked in. They were like low on booze supplies. And apparently like boats were like flooding in from across the Hebrides as word spread around.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
And so,
that's hilarious.
And they were, so there's kind of an argument because they were saying, well, the rules of salvage at sea mean that bounty that is lost is anyone's to claim. And those views were clearly not shared by the customs officer, who was like, I don't think so. And so he shows up and starts to demand that the police need to like raid all the farms where clearly all this whiskey's been buried, hidden, you know, put on a shelf somewhere, drank.
As quickly as
honestly,
possible.
The amount that must have been drank in that time to be like, we're not giving it back, we are drinking it.
Yeah, even I would drink it all. Yeah.
Up. Right. And so eventually a couple of, I think some of the men were eventually pled guilty and they were charged, you know, £3, £5 or something. And so Charles McCall, who's this customs official, was not interested in that and kept going on to the police. But the police were locals also and were just like, well, it's fine. Clearly they were part of it.
Yeah.
Well.
They'd lent their boats out and had three crates buried under the toilet.
Yes, they were very uncomfortable about their homes being searched. They're like, I think we'll just leave this one alone for now. And then what eventually, in a very un-Scottish thing to me, is so there's a few kind of salvage attempts. And eventually, because he wanted to ensure that nothing more was stolen, Charles got permission to basically explode the ship, which I think is what? Like sacrilege in Scotland.
Wait, so is Charles the...
He's the like customs guy.
What prick.
Oh, what a villain.
And so they blew up the ship. And I mean, it'd be interesting to know now. So the film's based on that. And it was interesting because I watched this TV show and Alan Cumming goes up and the local pub that was opened in 19, I mean, it wasn't open until 1988, is called Am Politician. And they still had a bottle on the shelf, like one of the bottles that had been kept for all these years. And apparently as late as in 1987, a local had found 8 bottles and sold them for £4,000, which is kind of great. So I'm sure there's still some, you know, in a little back cupboard of someone's house that they've been holding on to all these time. And I'd be curious, like, if they ever, maybe they still wash up on beaches. Who knows?
It's got Eddie Izzard and Rabsy Nesbitt in it.
It does?
Yeah, I just pulled it up.
I think there's also two. There was like a remake, right?
Oh, yeah. This was made pretty recently. I've lost where the date was. 2016. Like,
oh, there you go.
I think it's off the coast of France. Every so often, a whole raft of Garfield phones yeah. wash up on the beach because there was some shipping container that fell off the Atlantic and it's in that current.
Like decades ago. It takes forever. Yeah.
I thought it was amazing, the idea that they were just out in the middle of the night stealing all this whiskey, which you, of course, would do, right?
Oh, I love it. That's a great story.
Yeah.
It's very good.
G is for great story.
Yeah. I should have said that. I don't know why I said whiskey galore. Okay, last one. This should not take long. So, H is for here's a thing what I found on the internet.
Oh, come on. Come on, Johnny.
Look, I found this and I had to get it in somehow because I knew someone else would steal it. So, okay. This is a speech, a famous speech that's known as the If by Whiskey speech, which, Rory, I think you're going to talk a bit about Prohibition, I imagine. So I'm not getting into it too much, but this was a speech by a judge in 1952 on the floor of the Mississippi State Legislature concerning whiskey at the time. The judge was Noah Sweat, which is a great name.
Like and, Prince Andrew.
Exactly. And it was a speech that was a concerning...
Very funny joke.
That was very...
So I just want everybody to,
want to do it again?
Acknowledge that. Noah Sweat, like Prince Andrew. Right. So, you can have that, the Financial Times.
I hope when you listen back to this, you cut that out. Just
no,
met with
I don't
silence.
Cut anything anymore.
God.
Okay, and so he made this famous speech that was concerning the question of prohibition that was in force in Mississippi at the time, and I quite like just to read it to you, if that's all right.
Sure.
Okay. My friends, I had not intended to discuss this controversial...
You're not going
to
do it in a funny voice or anything?
No, I'm not.
My friends!
It's quite long. It's going to take about 40
just
minutes.
Just the entirety of it.
Settle in, yeah.
Nice. That's all we're asking.
No, I want Foghorn Leghorn.
Can you do Mickey Mouse raised by Foghorn Leghorn?
I see.
This is going to be such a long night. Okay, my friends, I had not intended to discuss this controversial subject at this particular time. However, I want you to know that I do not shun controversy. On the contrary, I will take a stand on any issue at any time, regardless of how fraught with controversy it might be. You've asked me about how I feel about whiskey. All right, this is how I feel about whiskey. If when you say whiskey, you mean the devil's brew, the poison scourge, the bloody monster that defiles innocence, dethrones reason, destroys the home, creates misery and poverty, yea, literally takes the bread from the mouths of little children. If you mean the evil drink that topples the Christian men and women from the pinnacle of righteous, gracious living into the bottomless pit of degradation and despair and shame and helplessness and hopelessness, then certainly I'm against it. But if when you say whiskey, you mean the oil of conversation, the philosophic wine, the ale that is consumed when good fellows get together, that puts a song in their hearts and laughter on their lips, and the warm glow of contentment in their eyes. If you mean Christmas cheer, if you mean the stimulating drink that puts the spring in the old gentleman's step on a frosty, crispy morning, if you mean the drink which enables a man to magnify his joy and his happiness, and to forget, if only for a little while, life's great tragedies, and heartaches, and sorrows, if you mean that drink, the sale of which pours into our treasuries untold millions of dollars, which are used to provide tender care for our little crippled children, or blind, or deaf, or dumb, or pitiful aged and infirm, to build highways and hospitals and schools, then certainly I am for it. This is my stand, and I will not retreat from it. I will not compromise.
That's beautiful.
Can you put some music under that? I think I'd really like that.
Yeah, I think so.
I just think it's an amazing speech.
I like when politicians do that. They're like pushing for some like casino to be built, but they've tied it to like, are you telling me that you don't want books to be in schools? Are you going to have those little children go hungry because you're taking away tax dollars? Well, then, you are obviously not a godly man. Yes.
It's the best sort of sitting on a fence speech I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
And so, I had to cram that in because I just thought it was great.
That was H for what again?
Here's a thing, what I found on the internet.
I like it. I have a very quick H, which is for Humphrey Bogart.
Rory, we did H. We've done H already.
Wait, I want to throw this out there. Apparently, his final words were, I should never switch from scotch to martinis. And then he died.
It's a great line.
Who's doing? Is this?
Wait, there's more? I thought that was it.
No, the alphabet actually keeps going, Johnny.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, Chris, I'm excited to hear what you're about to say.
I is for I'm really, really sorry for the technical issues there that no doubt you're going to have to edit out before people hear this. But I'm going to start with, well, basically, Johnny's already talked about it, so I could probably skip it if you guys are okay with that. I'm going to talk about Isla, which, as Johnny has mentioned, is one of the five whiskey distilling localities and regions in Scotland whose identity is protected by law. Isla is one of the southernmost of the Inner Hebridean Islands, located off the west coast of Scotland. And I think, as Johnny already said as well, the region is characterized by whiskies with a peat smoke aroma, such as, I don't know how you pronounce this actually, guys. Is it Laphroaig or Laphroaig?
Laphroaig.
How do you pronounce it?
Yeah, the first way you said.
Laphroaig, Lagavulin, and Ardbeg. And I think at the moment there are 9 active distilleries on the island. The island is only 25 by 15 miles. So it's absolutely tiny.
You know what I thought was interesting about Isla that I didn't realize until quite late on in life is I always thought it was kind of further away or like further north and really remote. And actually it's basically the same, I don't know if it's longitude or latitude, as Glasgow. Like it's as far north as Glasgow. Yeah, it's really interesting.
It's frequently described as just west of Glasgow, which...
I think it's because it also takes a long time to get there. It feels far away, but it's not.
Is there no direct ferry from Glasgow?
You need to
you have to go,
far north because there's one of the. Is it a peninsula that's like water that cuts into land?
Yeah, you have to sort of go around that. I forget what it's called.
There's like a northern facing peninsula, so you have to go all the way up and then all the way down. Yeah, it just really gets up in there, deep inside,
right in the devil's anus.
Yes.
So I am going to cheat a little bit and read from an independent article I found, which was a good review of somebody going to Isla. Or we could just hear what Johnny has to say about
it. Maybe just do 5 minutes of research on distilleries, Chris.
It's fine. So Isla is a rain-lashed place where high winds can whip the sea into ferocious waves that thrash the rocks. But on a sunny day, the clear waters and sandy coves mean the white beaches could be mistaken for those of the Caribbean. Is that true?
I think that is very true. Isla's one of those places where if you get it on a good day, it is unbelievably beautiful. And if you get it on a bad day, you're standing in horizontal rain.
Yeah.
I mean, so when is it a good day? Like one day in June?
But you
said there was like 9 distilleries and it was a tiny little island. The time that I went there, I got the bus and it's one of those islands where the only bus runs twice a day because it's a school bus. And that's it.
Yeah, because it's basically just one road across the middle. That's kind of the main road. And then there's sort of little villages around, right? Yeah. And that's kind of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds lovely. Just a couple fun facts about Isla. It's more than 100 islands and islets. Oh, we did F. Sorry, you're right. Some interesting things.
Oh, there you go. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. It's one of more than 100 islands and islets scattered down the side of Scotland's west coast. It is not the largest, but it's further south than the other large islands and is therefore well placed to enjoy the warming effect of the transatlantic Gulf Stream. It's also the nearest Scottish island to Ireland. It's only 22 miles from Ireland. Can you confirm?
Yes, correct.
Yep. Did you measure it?
It's 40,000 feet from Ireland.
But the main thing, again, which Johnny mentioned before, was that the good crops make the island a natural location for early whiskey distillation, and that's because of a guy called Pete, who lived on the island. I don't know who this guy Pete is, but he seems omnipresent on the island, and he's been there forever, and they say that he's kind of like the foundation of the island or something like that.
Is peat one of those, is it like a natural resource that takes a long time to create and we're probably...
He's got a terrible smoking habit, Pete. He's just been in it for a millennium.
Wow. All right. I'm gonna table my serious question for another time. I don't know
what I'll give you a little bit more about Pete's backstory, Rory, and you might be able to maybe answer those questions. According to this lovely article, there are a few trees in Islay and much of the ground is bogland, but lack of wood has never been an insurmountable problem over the centuries, despite the fuel requirements of the inhabitants there. Islay is so wet that the island never really dries, so throughout the year, like much of Scotland, the abundant grasses, mosses and shrub live and die in perpetual bog. So over centuries, the resultant decaying matter... It's very true. The resultant decaying matter creates this dense black substance.
Just read all of that sentence again, because that is just Scotland to a Scotland.
T. Yeah. Islay is so wet, the island never really dries. Throughout the year, like much of Scotland, the abundant grasses, mosses, and shrubs live and die in perpetual bog.
sounds about right.
But the difference between mainland Scotland and Islay is that on Islay, the seaweed and the windblown sea salt give the peat unique characteristics. So once cut and dried on firmer ground, the peat can then be burnt in a similar manner to coal. And that's when large-scale distilleries began to kind of flourish on Islay in the 17th and 18th centuries. Peat was the fuel that was used to dry the malt. Then when peat burns, it produces pungent smoke. So... that's kind of one
Pete
of the
Burns,
main reasons.
Wasn't he on Big Brother?
Yeah.
His face was all weird.
By the way, it is so Scottish that the amount of times I've been on West Coast Islands and you feel like you're never going to be dry again. It's sort of in your soul at that point.
Yeah. You just feel that you're part of a bog. So I am. I'm bogging right now.
I'm bogging. Boggins. Yeah. I don't have too much more to say about Islay, really. I mean, it just sounds like a lovely place. I think that, Johnny, you've given it two thumbs
for me. I do love it. I joke about the weather, but I've had some amazing holidays there. And, you know, it's the stuff, of course, the whiskey's brilliant. But I remember once we sort of read about this, like, oyster farm, and we basically just showed up at someone's farm, and they were like, here's the oysters we pulled out of the ocean this morning. You get like the freshest food you're ever going to have. It was incredible, actually.
Yeah. And I was interested particularly in looking at Islay because it's kind of spoiling my L bit, but I'm going ahead just talking a little bit about Lagavulin as well, which is one of the main distilleries there, which I'll get into in a minute. But I'm just going to diverge into Jay first.
Before you do that, we forgot that you didn't tell us about your whiskey journey. Basically.
Well, okay.
You don't like it, but I guess why? What is your experience been with it?
The great philosophers of the 1990s, Chumbawamba, sum up my relationship with whiskey, where... in university, I would take a whiskey drink, I'd take a lager drink, I'd take a vodka drink, I'd take a cider drink.
Yeah.
I'd sing the songs that remind me of the good times, mm-hmm. and sing the songs that remind me of the better times.
Like Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone.
Yeah.
Foo Fighters.
I don't know what to tell you. I've never developed the palate for it. As you said off air, I think I'm a semi-professional drinker these days. I was obviously a professional back in the day, but I've sort of, you know, had to hang up my boots a little bit. But
yeah, you're a father these days. You've got other priorities, you get it.
Yeah. But whiskey, I've never been a huge spirits person. I think that's my spirit, I'm not very spiritual. I like gin, and I think if I was to choose a spirit, it would be gin. But I don't know, because my parents never really drank it either, so I was never, not like as Johnny said, you know, be like, oh, can I have a glass? Like my dad was never really into it either, and I guess I just never was that interested in it. I don't know why, it just kind of passed me by, I suppose. And it's become a bit of a sort of running joke now that I just don't really care for it. Being a self-hating Scot, it all adds up as well.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. How? So you're an hour into arguably being forced to drink whiskey. How are you feeling?
Well, I've changed now to the Johnny Walker one just to try it.
Oh, really?
I haven't actually tried it yet. Yeah. It tastes exactly the same.
Do you think it tastes exactly the same, or
pretty much?
Right. Okay.
Pretty much.
Fair enough.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I say, I've got the palate of a 6-year-old. So no, you know. I mean,
you. Yeah. I wonder, has anybody got? Okay. I can talk about. I'll talk about it later in my queue up. Don't worry about it.
Mysterious.
Okay. I know.
By the way, just before you leave, Isla, I think it is interesting, Laphroaig, where I don't know why, but when you travel, it's one of the whiskies you'll see in almost every bar, I think. And I think that's why a lot of people know Isla whiskies. But I don't know why it became this sort of successful export. And it's maybe changing now, but I feel like...
I will say, from a patriotic standpoint... you know, just going into the liquor store today, down in Virginia, you have to go to specific liquor store. They do the spirits, and they're called ABC stores, and they look very kind of sparse, and they're sort of designed to make it look like drinking isn't fun, and it's very austere. And I was looking for Lagavulin, because I knew I was going to talk about it, and they didn't have that. But then, like, the whole whiskey thing was, like, it was basically mostly whiskeys from Scotland, and it did make me think, like, wow, we've really punched above our weight there. You know, it does make you feel a little bit kind of, oh, you know, we're good at something. But anyway, I'm going to segue slightly. So I did, when I was younger, Rory, when we were at university, I suppose we drank a lot of Jack Daniels, you know, JD and Coke.
Yeah.
So J is, for me, Jack Daniels, because I was curious. It's obviously not Scottish, but I was curious to... read about the kind of difference of the two.
You're about to tell us that Jack Daniels is Scottish.
No, but I always thought that Jack Daniels was a bourbon, but it is not a bourbon. And so I found a little kind of bit of research as to why this is the case. So although it's made almost exactly like bourbon and it pretty much tastes like bourbon, it's a little bit different. So its makers call it Tennessee whiskey. And this, again, goes back to Prohibition. The answer goes back to the repeal of Prohibition in 1933. So when the American distilling business restarted, there was these new rules that were put in place. And they defined different types of distilled spirits in great detail that required producers to use to the type of classifications that most closely describe their products. So if your whiskey met the standards for bourbon, you had to call it bourbon. And that was supposed to be the rule. But the makers of Jack Daniels, who are a family called the Motlow family in Tennessee, Tennessee didn't actually repeal its state prohibition laws in 1933 along with the rest of the country. And this prevented Jack Daniels from resuming operations, and distilling didn't actually become legal in Tennessee until 1937. So when Jack Daniels started up again, they made some products that they could sell right away, like brandy and some corn whiskey. Mm. But they knew that Jack Daniels, the main product that they have... that they were making would not need label approval until about 1941, because it would take that long for the first batch to fully age. So when they eventually did submit the label for approval, they didn't call it bourbon classification, and that began a whole series of negotiations with the government and the family. And the family had never called their whiskey bourbon before, and they didn't intend to start now. And basically, they kind of did a lot of legal wrangling back and forth, and tests were conducted in government laboratories there. And in the end, the government concluded that actually Jack Daniel's Tennessee whiskey neither has the characteristics of bourbon or rye whiskey, but it's like its completely own thing, which they have labeled as whiskey. And so that was spelled out in an official letter withdrawing the agency's, you know, early objections to the label that was proposed. And so that's why Jack Daniel's is what we know it as today. So I know that's not really Scottish, but
I had no idea.
I went down the rabbit hole there for that. I thought it was pretty cool. And obviously, I think Jack Daniel's is probably the most famous whiskey in the world. We could all argue.
Probably Johnny Walker.
Maybe Johnny Walker, yeah.
Yeah. Mm,
yeah, you could be right, yeah.
I
guess Jack Daniel's is the only whiskey that I was really fully exposed to when I was a kid. Or not as a kid, but as a, you know, 19, 20-year-old. When we would have JD and Coke and stuff. And
I have, speaking of bourbon and rye and all that type of stuff, I get very, and maybe we'll talk about it later, but I get very frustrated. Not frustrated, but I definitely have a bias towards, like, to me, whiskey is Scottish whiskey. Everything else is like bourbon, rye. The Japanese need to come up with their own name.
It's like a champagne and sparkling wine.
Yes, yes, right. That sort of thing. And it's definitely a prickish thing of me to think, but I can't help it.
Well, even the Irish, are you going to let the Irish call it with an E?
No, they should just... Like, it's just urine in a bottle. I mean,
wow. Well, okay. Wow. This is a good segue for Kay, and we already talked about this slightly earlier. Bear with me. Whiskey, K-E-Y.
Come on.
Yeah.
I mean,
What is the key between the difference between whiskey and whiskey?
The key difference. Yes. Yeah.
What's the key in whiskey and whiskey?
This guy's
good. You guys, this is a question. Everybody's asking it. We've got many emails. Josh was on the phone earlier. He was curious to know. So I did a bit of research on it. So what's the difference? Is it simply two different spellings of the same word, or are they two slightly different words describing two separate groups of spirits?
The gamble that you took that Johnny didn't have this in E. Like, the natural place for this to be is E.
Let's go
I
back.
I think the natural place for this to be is key. K for key.
We'll start over. Let's go take it from
Did
the
Johnny
top.
Have it? Why are you putting up a fuss?
What
Johnny,
if I've got it? What if I've got it?
He's got it, doesn't
he? W.
For Z or something.
Yes. It doesn't matter. I've done it already.
Whiskey.
Come on.
Sorry.
That's a good one.
Wait, what is the difference?
Okay, so the spelling, I think, as you guys both just said there, spelling depends on the spirit's country of origin. So American-produced varieties like bourbon, rye, Tennessee, and the Irish spirit use whiskey with a K-E-Y spelling, whereas the spirit from Scotland, Canada, and Japan use the K-Y spelling. American and Irish liquor producers and copy editors tend to favor the spelling whiskey with K-E-Y, while Scottish, Canadian, and Japanese producers and copy editors prefer the other way. And this, the main difference is the spelling, but there is a little bit more to it. And if you look at the American, Scottish, and Irish spirits, you'll notice that there are a few rules about how the liquor is produced in these countries. So, for instance, the number of times that a whiskey is distilled depends on where you are in the world. In the US, whiskey, K-E-Y, is typically distilled two times. Same goes for that in Scotland, but in Ireland, a whiskey is typically distilled three times before it begins the aging process. Basically, to make a long explanation short, whiskey, K-E-Y with an E, refers to grain spirits distilled in Ireland and the US, but whiskey with no E refers to Scottish, Canadian, or Japanese grain spirits, and that's basically it.
Got it.
Huh.
Boring explanation, but that's the reason.
That's the key. Thanks for clearing things up.
Thanks.
Truth bomb.
Scottish whiskey spelt with an E also makes me irrationally angry.
I didn't even know that was a thing.
It's just, you'll see it in like a lot of like American websites about whiskey. Yeah. And they'll be talking about Scottish whiskey, but they'll spell it with an E.
Right.
And it's another one of those stupid things that annoys me.
I find it quite annoying having to say Scotch, like when I want to just say whiskey.
Oh, I hate that.
Scotch.
Refuse to say.
Anyway,
are we? Chris, how many? What are you on now? Key?
I'm on L. We can stop at L. I don't mind.
Yeah, let's stop at L and then bring it back. Do you wanna tease us? Give us some licks of what's coming next. Maybe give us a lick
well,
of
your, say that
your lollipop.
L is a long love letter to one of my all-time heroes.
I like it a lot.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, look, come back, everybody, for part 2 of 24 on Thistledown Icy's 7-year series into whiskey. So we'll see you next week. Thistle do, lads. Thistle do nicely. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you like the show, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and write a quick review on whichever podcasting app you're using. It really does help us out. We'd love to hear from you either via our email, thistledonicelypod@gmail.com, or via facebook.com/thistledopod, or follow us on Instagram and Twitter @thistledopod. You can also visit our website, thistledonicelypod.com. All original music in this podcast is written and performed by our very own Johnny Naismith. Please like and subscribe to his YouTube channel and follow him on Instagram @JAW_KNEE_. Love, hugs, and kisses from the Thistledown Nicely pod.
Really hot after all that. I think I might need to lie down.
Woo!
Lovely. Just lovely.